By the time we arrive at the dungeon proper, we're deep beneath the castle. I can feel the walls of this place pressing in from all sides, the sensation reminding me of when I was Carnon's prisoner, trapped in one of his many subterranean cells. I take a deep breath. Pretty sure that experience has given me claustrophobia for life. The sleeping soldiers are crammed into dozens and dozens of cells, and even though hundreds of them were killed, there's almost not enough room for the ones that remain. As we pass by the cells, I note that the fairies are still caught in the hold of my glamour. They stare straight ahead, their faces impassive. Don't know what's creepier, their true nature or this catatonic state they've fallen into. In the last cell, a single soldier is housed. She stands inert in the middle of the chamber, her flame-red hair falling in spirals down her back. Dez, our escorts, and I all pause in front of the cell, taking in the fairy. She's oblivious to our attention. The bargainer's hand falls to the back of my neck. His face is impassive, but I can tell he's not thrilled with this little plan of mine. He doesn't, however, try to talk me out of it.
"Open the door,"
Dez commands the guards, not looking away from me. The iron bars screech as the door opens. The red-haired soldier doesn't so much as glance at the door before I slip inside. I stare at her for a long moment before I let my siren surface.
"I release you from my glamour."
I expect the soldier to attack me, but she doesn't. For several long seconds, nothing happens. Then the redhead's eyes slide to me. My muscles tense. I'm waiting for her to strike. Instead, she begins to pace back and forth, her gaze growing distant.
"What is your name?" I ask, my voice melodic.
"I don't have a name," she responds.
"Everyone has a name," I insist.
"I don't. Not anymore." Losing a name is such a tiny injustice compared to everything the thief has done, and yet it's what gave her an identity, and he took that from her.
"What did it used to be?" I ask.
She pauses for so long, I'm sure she'll never speak.
"Muriel,"
she finally says, the magic coaxing the answer out of her.
"And do you know who I am?"
Muriel pauses, then slowly nods.
"You're the Enchantress. We are allowed to hurt you, but we are not to kill you. Not yet. He wants you alive."
My claws sharpen at that. They weren't allowed to kill me? I remember how hard I fought and how vicious my assailants were. None of them seemed like they were holding back.
"Who wants me alive?"
I ask, even though I damn well know.
"My master."
"Fucking thief." The cell darkens. Apparently the king of the night is not too happy about that either.
"And is your master the one who woke you from your sleep?"
"He called, and we answered," she says, continuing to pace back and forth, back and forth.
"Why did you attack your comrades, Muriel?"
I ask, my voice lilting. She frowns when she hears her name on my lips.
"I don't know."
She keeps pacing.
"What do you mean you don't know?"
I get that this woman's mind has been fucked three ways to Wednesday, but surely she has a better explanation for all this carnage than "I don't know."
"We do our master's bidding," she says. "Nothing more." "And what does your master want?" I probe.
"I don't know," she says distractedly. Getting nowhere.
"Who kidnapped you?"
I start again. Can she remember that far back? Some of these women have been sleeping for years.
"My older brother,"
she replies coolly, still walking back and forth, back and forth. Her brother? I don't think I heard that one correctly.
He's been dead for well over a century.
Des says from the other side of the cell. My eyebrows rise and I spare my mate a glance. He knew this woman's brother? The soldier's eyes wander to the bargainer and there they rest. Slowly she tilts her head, like recognition is upwelling from the depths of her memory.
You, she breathes. You held me once, long ago.
Come again? My skin flares with agitation. I glance between the two of them. Is this broad seriously admitting to what I think she is?
He made love to me then, under the stars. My claws elongate.
She is!
Let's eviscerate her slowly, my siren says. It will be fun.
It's a strange feeling to be jealous of a woman who, in all probability, slept with your mate centuries before you existed. A woman who's now nothing more than a shell of herself, her mind and body commandeered by the thief of souls. And yet, I still feel the hot burn of it. Des folds his arms, looking unamused. He doesn't try to explain himself to me, which is probably a good thing. Doing so would make him look guilty as fuck, and it wasn't like he cheated on me. But damn it, I want a little groveling. Is that wrong?
He will grovel, the siren insists.
All right, if she thinks groveling is kosher, it's probably wrong, but that doesn't mean I disagree with her.
I force myself to refocus on the task at hand. Des had mentioned that Muriel's brother died a little over 100 years ago.
It takes me a moment to do the math.
Not my strong suit. But once I do, I realize that the timeline doesn't work. Female soldiers started disappearing a decade ago, not a century. How could your brother have kidnapped you if he was dead? Janice had a twin who died. The thief had told me in the Flora Queen's woods. The first time you met him, you were really meeting me.
Muriel's vacant eyes focus on the ground.
I don't know.
This vexing answer again.
I had hoped. Muriel begins, then she falls to silence. Speak to me freely, I command her.
Slowly, her eerie gaze shifts to meet mine.
It's dark here. Very dark.
The back of my neck pricks.
Are you in the Night Kingdom? I ask. Yes and no.
I wait for her to say more, but she doesn't.
What do you mean by that? It is very dark here, she repeats. I want to rest. Why can't I rest? Do you know where the thief is?
I press.
You'll never find him.
So everyone keeps saying.
Is there anything else you can tell me? I ask. Secrets are meant for one soul to keep.
I sense, rather than see, Des stiffen at her words. The corner of Muriel's mouth curves up.
He's watching you, Enchantress. Always watching you. My master has developed a taste for slaves.
My siren pushes through.
You can tell your master I've developed a taste for evil fuckers.
I breathe, the words harmonic as they roll off my tongue.
Have him come find me. I'm eager to see him again. I'll teach him then what it means to be my bitch.
I wrangle my siren into submission and regain control of myself. I walk a fine line, using my glamour and trying to keep her worst tendencies at bay. The cell darkens again, and suddenly Des is in the cell with us.
Interrogation is over, he says.
Before I can protest, the iron door swings open and I'm whisked out. I swivel back to face Muriel just as it clangs shut.
One final question. If I let you out now, what will you do?
Her eyes fall on me.
Conquer.
Chapter 7. Des broods next to me, the hallway we walked down darkening with his presence. You could have let me finish the interrogation, I finally say. I mean, he's not the only one who's in a ripe mood. I have blood caked in my hair. I'm running on half a night's worth of sleep. My bones want to give out from post-battle exhaustion, and I needed coffee hours ago.
You walk on thin ice right now, Callie,
the bargainer growls. I swivel to face him, his words riling me up. I'm the one on thin ice, I say, my voice rising. You're the one who screwed the prisoner. Brought that up sooner than I intended.
2 centuries ago, Dez says. Do you expect me to give you a formal apology for every person I've slept with? Because if so, I damn well better receive the same from you.
You are insane. The Night King disappears from my side, only to reappear in front of me, his body blocking the way and forcing me to stop.
You goaded him,
he growls.
You goaded the Thief of Souls to find you.
He runs an agitated hand through his hair, the movement exposing one of his pointed ears.
Can you not see? This is the same reason I stopped taking you on my bargains when you attended Peel Academy.
I'd glamored a man back then, too. A man who, ironically enough, knew information on the Thief of Souls. He'd been willing to die rather than share his knowledge, and still I made him talk. I still flush at the memory. And now the bargainer is essentially saying that in all that time I haven't changed. I take issue with that. I'm already in the thief's line of sight. I will not let that monster provoke me without provoking him back. A muscle in the bargainer's face ticks. He steps in close.
You want to know a secret, Cherub?
He asks, his voice dropping low.
Earlier this evening, when I tried to stop all those sleeping soldiers back in our chambers, it didn't work.
There was that moment in his bedroom when I thought he'd bleed into the darkness and end those sleeping soldiers just as he had Carnon and his men. But he hadn't been able to.
Do you want to know why that wouldn't work?
Dez asks. He doesn't wait for me to answer.
The darkness is loyal to its own. It won't hurt another fairy that wields its power.
I feel the first thread of unease at his words.
That means the thief is one of my kind. He's a night fae.
My knees go a little weak. A night fae? One who is impervious to Dez's magic?
He is not impervious to ours,
my siren whispers, her voice seductive. The king of the night cups my face.
I am mad with fear for you,
he says, his voice pitched low.
It feels like the wheels of fate are pushing you closer and closer to the thief, and nothing I do can prevent it. That terrifies me.
To hear Dez admit to being afraid, it's like that moment as a child when you see an adult cry for the first time, like the person you depended on to have their shit together really doesn't. It's the kind of thing that shakes your world.
I am sorry you had to hear about my past the way you did,
he says hoarsely. I think this is an apology. He leans in close, his lips a hair's breadth from mine.
But I will admit, I greedily drank up your reaction.
With that confession, his lips press against mine. It's stupid how fast his kiss can banish my frayed nerves. He kisses away our discussion, his taste and touch consuming my thoughts. And even though the day is a mess, and I'm a mess, and the other world has gone to crap, for a few blissful seconds, everything is as it should be. All I want right now is a shower, coffee, and bed, preferably all at the same time. Don't tell me it can't happen. I'm in the other world. Impossible is this place's middle name. But am I going to get what I want? Nope. Instead, I have to freaking adult it, which means hauling my butt into some random room in the castle and making sense of the clusterfuck that is the present state of affairs. Well, 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 look what the cat dragged in. Temperance Darling, my best friend, colleague, and fellow troublemaker, calls out as soon as we enter. She sits alongside Malachi and several Fey officials, her ankles propped on the table in front of her. Her eyes move over me. And damn, girl, looks like the cat didn't just drag you in. It had a little fun with you, too. My relief at seeing Temper alive is quickly eclipsed by her words. I spare my bloody battle leathers a glance before I take in Temper. She wears a white jumpsuit, and that outfit is pristine. Next to her, Malachi looks stern, his scar especially stark beneath his eye patch. He keeps opening and closing his hands, and I get the distinct impression that he wants to hurt something. As soon as he sees Dez, he stands and crosses the room in a few quick strides. He brings his friend in close, slapping him on the back. I move to the seat next to Temper. "You could take a few tips from him," I say. She waves the comment away. Hugs are for pussies. I let out a little snicker, grabbing the cup of coffee resting in front of her and taking a sip from it. "Hey, bitch, that was mine?" "Aw," I say, giving her a precious look. "Does someone have trouble sharing?" I take a long drink from it. Temper's eyes narrow. "Careful I don't hex that coffee to splash you in the face every time you drink it," she says. I smile over the rim of the coffee. "Careful I don't glamour you to tell Malachi how you really feel about him." To be honest, I don't even know if my magic works on humans anymore, but she doesn't need to know that. Temper shakes her head. "That's low, Callie." The two of us fall to silence, watching Dez and Malachi grip each other's shoulders and make all sorts of man oaths about dying by the blade to protect one another and yada, yada, yada. "Malachi is just being excessive," Temper says. "We heard hours ago that you two were okay." She nudges my shoulder with her own. "Heard you can now glamour Faye." She puts her fist out, and I bump my knuckles against hers. "Fuck yeah, my girl." Dez and Malachi speak in low tones for a little longer. Something the Night King says causes Malachi to chuckle, and something the General says draws Dez's eyes to me, his gaze intense enough to make my stomach flutter. He pulls away from his friend and heads over to the table, taking a seat next to me. His hand falls to my thigh as he nods at each of the advisors seated at the table who've also been waiting for us. A few of the advisors cast me and Temper curious looks. I doubt they're used to having humans, former or otherwise, at these meetings.
"I'm glad to see everyone alive and well,"
Dez begins as Malachi takes his seat.
"Let's get straight to the matter. The Night Kingdom fell under siege tonight at the hands of our own people. What do we know about the situation?"
And thus the talks begin. The group of us rehash what we already know. A bunch of sleeping soldiers woke up from their long slumber, each possessed with the need to kill and maim and conquer. Then we tally up the dead and wounded, then note the damage wrought to the kingdom.
"We were not alone,"
one of the advisors says.
"We received reports from the other three kingdoms that they too were attacked."
My dream floods back to me in all its vividness, of the thief standing amongst those poisoned oaks as they splintered open. I don't know where the line between fantasy and reality is anymore.
"The kingdom of Flora fell,"
the advisor continues.
"The kingdom of Flora fell?"
The phrasing conjures up images of those giant cedar trees toppling to the ground, of the earth swallowing up the palace whole. It doesn't do the truth justice. An entire city was likely cut down. All those people just gone. I can't process that sort of devastation. Not when we were just there. I danced and drank and reveled alongside Flora fairies. They might not have been my favorite people, but now knowing the deadly task those sleeping soldiers set out to accomplish, how many died? I ask. The room is silent, and the advisor looks helplessly at me while another shakes her head. Too many. All those sleeping men. The kingdom never stood a chance. Malachi tosses a sheet of parchment into the middle of the table.
We've heard rumors that Mara got out in time, but the same cannot be said for the rest of Flora's citizens.
Dez flicks his wrist and the parchment slides his way. The bargainer's eyes skim the notes.
Fauna is gone as well,
Malachi continues.
Though from our reports, few died. There was no resistance for the soldiers to crush.
There wouldn't even be a palace to invade. All of that was wiped clean when Dez rescued me from Carnon.
The Kingdom of Day has defeated its foes for the time being,
another advisor adds. My gaze moves to the table in front of us. Painted onto it is a map of the other world. The mainland has been completely captured. The only places left unconquered are the kingdoms of day and night, those that float in the sky.
Temper leans forward.
How did that pretty boy king manage to defeat them?
Malachi frowns, and it might be my imagination, but I'm fairly sure it bothers him that Temper thinks that Janus, the king of day, is in fact pretty, particularly when it's so obvious that Malachi isn't pretty with his eye patch and scar. Clearly he doesn't realize that his ferocious beauty is just as appealing. But now's not the time to tell Malachi that pretty was never Temper's type, or that Dez's general should be more worried about Temper ravaging his man bits to death than her having a wandering eye. She's loyal to a fault.
I imagine we'll find out soon enough,
Dez says, tapping his fingers on the table. His gaze moves from person to person.
The conquered kingdoms will regroup, and then they'll turn their sights on us,
he says grimly.
My mate's glamour can't save us all. We need to figure out another strategy. This time, I want to be ready for them.
After Dez deals out official orders, he dismisses his advisors, leaving just himself, Malachi, Temper, and me in the room.
If we're going to defeat the Thief of Souls,
the Night King says,
we need to do more than simply have a good defense against his forces. We need to figure out once and for all who and what he really is and where he's hiding.
What if we went after Gallagher? I say. Gallagher Nix, the formerly dead Night King, is somehow decidedly no longer dead. Back in the Flora Kingdom, he'd been responsible for luring soldiers into the woods, and he'd been there the night I nearly lost my life.
If we find him, I continue, we might find the thief.
Temper swings her legs off the table. Girl, one problem with that little plan of yours, we don't know where he is either.
I mean, it ain't like he's standing outside flashing his titties and begging us to capture him.
I give my friend a look. I guess it's too bad we aren't PIs who specialize in finding people. Temper harumphs. Dez stands leaning heavily against the table. His eyes meet mine and he gives me a slight nod. We should check Gallagher's crypt at the very least.
Cherub,
Dez says, his silver gaze raking me over.
Care to pay my father's tomb a visit?
So I can kick that fucker's corpse in the balls? Love to. We don't visit the tomb right away. Instead, the two of us return to the King of the Night's chambers. I can feel the weight of this long evening settling on my shoulders. Silently, Dez comes up behind me and begins to unfasten my battle leathers.
I'm sorry,
he says softly, loosening buckles and untying straps.
For this war, for putting you in the thief's crosshairs, for making you endure last night.
None of that is your fault, I say over my shoulder, my words quiet.
Maybe,
he muses. His quick wit is gone for the moment, and I get a taste of another side of Dez, one that feels old and wise and battle-weary. He pulls my leathers off my shoulder and places a kiss there. Despite the solemn circumstances, goosebumps break out along my skin. He removes my top and his hands skim down my arms. The bargainer's hands slip farther down my body, and his magic peels away the last of my clothes and the last of his.
Let me take care of you, Cherub,
he says from behind me.
For the life of me, I don't honestly know what he means by that. He's taken care of me every single day he's been in my life. But I nod anyway because being taken care of sounds really, really nice right now. Without another word, the bargainer scoops me up and carries me into the bathroom. The tub is already filled to the rim with water. Scattered around it are lamps that flicker with starbursts of light. A balmy night breeze flutters in through the arched windows. Dez walks the two of us into the tub, sitting us down in the warm bathwater. I swallow as the liquid turns pink. All the while, the King of Night holds me close, cupping my head against his chest. I don't know why, but this is the moment all my courage and bravado falls away. So many people died tonight, all of them victims in one way or another. Some of them I killed myself. The proof of it is discoloring the bathwater. The Night King must sense my shifting mood because he says,
"It's all right, Callie. It's all right. We're just going to rinse off the blood and dirt."
I close my eyes and my shoulders begin to shake, and it's stupid, 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 but I begin to cry against him. I feel 16 all over again. 16 and broken and desperate for the bargainer to fix me, even though that was never his job to begin with. But he did fix me. He picked up each broken piece of me and put me back together, and he loved my cracks in a way that only he could. And then 7 years passed, and I grew up. I believed that all those fragile parts of me were gone, but here we are again, me with blood on my hands and thoughts of dead Faye and that fucking thief all filling my head. I lean my forehead against Dez's chest and silently cry against him. He doesn't need a confession from me to know what's wormed its way under my skin. He cradles the back of my head and holds me to him. I sit there in his arms, keeping my eyes closed so that I can't see the discolored water. Dez begins to hum. I pause for just a moment, recognizing the melody. He used to sing the same song under his breath back in my dorm room. At the sound, my sobs quiet. Because Dez is here, comforting me as he used to, and even as I mourn the evening's horrors, I savor this. He holds me a little longer, and then he grabs a washcloth and begins to scrub my skin, raking the cloth up and down my back, then moving to my arms. He carefully runs it down my wrist and over each finger of mine, all the while humming that same song. I take in a shuddering breath and watch his ministrations. "You don't have to clean..."
"Cherub."
With one word, he stops my weak protest in its tracks. It's quiet for a few minutes as my breath evens, the only sound the slight splash of water as Dez scours my body.
"This is..."
Dez begins, then starts again.
"In my imaginings, we did this. I scrubbed the world's filth off of you, until you were just you in my arms."
"Stop," I say, my voice breaking. I had almost put myself back together, but Dez's words are going to pull me apart again. The washcloth gets to my face and he tilts my chin up.
"You saved my people tonight, Callie. You saved them. Who knows how many more would have died if you hadn't been there."
I stare into his moonlit eyes.
"I've never seen anything more beautiful or fearsome than you beguiling those Fae. You are a force of nature."
I swallow. "You're no longer immune to it." I'd seen firsthand what my glamour could now do to Dez.
"I'm delightfully terrified of the prospect. Our sex life has just gotten 10 times kinkier."
He has no idea. I glance at the water. I don't know what magic the bargainer is dealing out, but the bath's water is now crystal clear. Whatever blood once sullied it is no longer visible. Dez sets the washcloth aside and brushes his thumb along my lower lip.
"Give me a wish,"
he says out of the blue. "Why?" I ask.
"Because I want one."
demanding fairy.
I raise my eyebrows.
And what's the cost? I ask.
He taps my nose.
So jaded. I wish you had a little more faith in me.
My eyebrows hike up farther.
So you're giving me a free wish?
Perhaps free is not the right word.
That's what I thought.
He plays with my hair.
But you'll like the repayment. That I promise.
I don't doubt it.
Fine. I want coffee.
Out of all the wishes in the world, that's the one you go for?
Des looks distinctly unimpressed. I really want a cup of Joe, all right, so sue me. My brief taste of tempers wasn't enough.
I tilt my head back and forth, weighing his words.
You're right, on second thought, maybe I should wish for another boyfriend.
A cup manifests out of the ether and into Des's hand.
All right, baby siren,
he says, cutting me off.
I see how you're going to play your hand.
He presses the mug into one of my palms. I grin at him, the last of my earlier sadness vanishing with the action.
Going to have to remind you later of why there will only ever be me,
he murmurs. My grin widens and the bargainer leans in and steals a quick kiss, the action causing some of the blessed coffee in my mug to slosh into the water. As always, Des tastes like sin and wicked thoughts, and I'm almost more interested in drinking him up than I am the coffee. Almost. Once the kiss ends, I lean back against the rim of the tub and gather my knees to my chest.
What was that song? I ask, taking a sip of my coffee.
Des is appraising me like he wants to eat me for lunch.
What song?
The one you were humming just now.
Recognition sparks in his eyes.
For my lost love, I dream of thee.
I set my mug next to one of the glowing lanterns.
I like it, I admit.
He gives me a soft smile.
I'm glad you do. My mother used to sing it to me when I was little.
That confession, freely given, I note, sends a pang through me. There's a soft spot in Des's heart that belongs to his mom and his mom alone, and for the 100th time I wish I could have met her.
What's the song about? I ask.
The bargainer's expression turns a little melancholic.
A man loses the love of his life, and he yearns for night because in dreams they're reunited,
he says.
The two of us are quiet for a moment.
Well, that's a fucking bummer, I finally say. That's the song he's been reassuring me with this whole time? That's like chasing away a nightmare by telling someone a ghost story.
There's a beat of silence, and then Des's laughter fills the chamber.
Yeah, Cherub, it really is.
Chapter 8. I glance around me at the sun-scorched earth. This is not what I've been expecting. I mean, I'm not sure what I had been expecting when it came to Gallagher Nix's resting place, but I think I assumed it would be somewhere in the Night Kingdom, and that a cemetery would be involved. To be fair, the place feels about as morbid as a cemetery. After I'd had coffee, a bath, and a wink, a fuck ton of sleep, Des and I headed off to visit the tomb of Des's father, which apparently is this wasteland of a place. My eyes sweep over the landscape again. The dry, dusty earth stretches out for miles and miles around us, only interrupted here and there by a boulder. Off in the distance, some craggy cliffs rise, looking just as barren as the land. The wind whistles a lonesome, loveless tune as it tugs at my hair. It's more than just the austere look of the place. There's something about this land, like colors seeping away and the senses are dulling. It feels as though the earth itself is sucking the life out of me. What is this place? I ask.
The Banished Lands,
Des says, squinting at our surroundings.
It's a section of land that divides the Flora and Fauna kingdoms. This is where exiled fairies go.
You know what? I didn't even know fairies could be exiled. I assumed fae rulers just made their criminals disappear. I guess you learn something new every day.
And you buried your dad here, I say, putting the pieces together.
The bargainer stares at the landscape, a troubled expression on his face, before his gaze meets mine.
This is as close to desecrating his body as I could get, he says.
The admission sends a shiver through me. Dez is so good to me that I often forget just how ruthless he can be.
Night's falling here, and for once since I met Dez, the darkness doesn't feel welcoming. I take the bargainer's hand. Show me where your father is buried.
We cut across the landscape, Dez leading me towards an unassuming cluster of stones, the biggest of which is as large as a car. When we get to them, Dez lifts his hand, his expression grim. Down our bond, I sense the pull of magic, and then I feel it around us, saturating the parched air. With a groan, the massive stone in front of us drags itself aside, revealing a small and crudely made pit. For a while, the bargainer simply stares down into the inky darkness, his face expressionless. I lick my parched lips.
Is this
my father's resting place?
Dez says, his eyes never wavering from that hole in the ground. As far as burials go, this one is pretty much the equivalent of giving the dead the middle finger, a final fuck you to send them off to the afterlife with. So I guess it's fitting for his a-hole dad.
Why give him a tomb at all? I ask. I would have thrown his carcass to the wolves.
Believe me, I didn't want to.
Dez takes a deep breath, then tears his gaze away from that hole. A sardonic smile pulls the corner of his mouth up.
After Gallagher died, I left his body out for carrion to eat, he says. But no creature would touch it. When that did not work, I set his body to sea, but the waves returned it to me.
I stare at him as he talks, sensing his restlessness. My own unease is growing.
I tried burning his body.
He rubs his lower lip.
It was impervious to flame. I tried to vaporize his remains, but they resisted my magic.
My eyes dip to that hole in the ground, trying not to get spooked by Dez's words.
There are only three types of souls whose bodies can resist returning to the earth. Those that are too powerful for it, those that are too pure for it, and those that are too corrupted for it.
One guess which category Desmond Flynn's father falls into.
Eventually I brought him here.
The bargainer's eyes return to the pit.
It killed me to give him even this, a hole in the ground. He deserved so much worse.
From the stories I've heard, that Gallagher had slaughtered all his heirs in a bid to keep his throne, I can't help but agree. Dez releases another breath and steps up to the edge of the hole. He kneels, studying its depths. Then in one smooth motion, he lowers himself into the darkness. Oh, sweet Jesus, we're going down there. Of course we are. Really don't want to. Maybe I can just linger topside.
Don't tell me you've developed a fear of the darkness now, cherub.
Dez calls from below, his voice echoing.
Ugh.
Fine. I move up to the hole, sitting down at its edge and letting my feet dangle into it. I squint into the shaft, trying to gauge how deep it is. From the shadows, two hands wrap around my ankles, and with a swift jerk, I'm yanked into the darkness. Before I have a chance to shriek for dear life, Dez catches me, and I'm sure he can feel the drum of my heart pounding against his chest. Oh my God, I say, breathless, my skin brightening seconds too late. Why would you do that? Dez laughs into the darkness.
You are much too tempting to toy with.
His eyes drop to my lips, caught in the glow of my glamour.
And to resist.
He leans in, but before he can kiss me, I press a hand to his mouth. I chastise him, glamour in my voice.
You don't get a kiss for that.
At my words, he pulls away a little, his eyes bright.
What do I get?
He says, the corner of his mouth curving into a mischievous grin.
A spanking,
my siren whispers. Let's make him give himself a spanking. He's been a bad boy. I almost laugh at the thought. You get the pleasure of avoiding my siren's wrath. She wants you to spank yourself. The appropriate reaction is to be horrified at the thought. Too bad the bargainer is decidedly inappropriate. His face fills with gleeful surprise.
Naughty thing,
he chastises.
And right here in my father's grave, too.
Now he does give me a quick kiss.
Maybe later I'll appease your dirty thoughts.
In the dim light cast by my skin, I see him wink at me. It's enough to mollify my siren. With that, Dez releases me.
Watch your step,
he advises.
There's a tricky staircase you'll need to maneuver. On second thought, it'd probably be best if I carried you.
Before I can say or do anything else, his magic curls like smoke low in my belly. I feel the tug of it drawing me close to him. This is repayment for the coffee, isn't it? I say as the magic courses through me. That or Dez really likes stirring my siren into action. Because where a second ago she was settling back down, now she's pressing against the underside of my skin, eager to take over completely.
I told you repayment would be fun,
Dez says, a smirk in his voice. Ha! This is not really what I had in mind when I made that wish.
Consider this foreplay, baby siren.
And still his magic tugs at me, getting more insistent with every passing second. All right, but I want to ride piggyback, I state.
I didn't realize that you called the terms of repayment,
he says smoothly, scooping me up. Now that I'm in his arms, the magic relaxes.
Of course, if you want to ride me from behind.
His tone is undeniably sexual.
I won't protest too much, though it's not my favorite position.
God, he's in rare form today. He moves me to his back, and I wrap my arms around his neck, breathing in his smell as his hair tickles my cheek. His hands hook beneath my legs, and he carries me down the winding stairway and deep into the ground. The air down here is thick like molasses, heavy with protective wards meant to keep intruders out. It's a shock to feel so much magic concentrated here when the land itself seems parched of it. Dez utters a phrase in Old Fae, and just like snapping one's fingers, the magic parts, letting us through. Ahead of us, mounted torches flare to life, illuminating a small chamber. The walls, ceiling, and floor of it are nothing more than packed dirt. Right in the middle of the room, sitting on a natural bed of rock, is a rough-hewn stone sarcophagus. Maybe it's the spells that still thicken the air, or maybe it's the sight of the stone coffin, or maybe it's simply the fact that this is the tomb of a man so evil the earth won't corrupt his body. But a wave of vertigo washes through me. If it weren't for Dez's hold on me, I would have slid off his back. Gently, Dez sets me down so he can lift his hand towards the sarcophagus. His magic briefly thickens the air, then stone grinds against stone as the lid begins to slide off the coffin. An old, sour-tasting terror I used to feel whenever I thought about my father now rushes back. But it's not my stepdad who's frightening to me. It's the possibility of what's beneath that stone slab. A body that cannot decay. A man who's back from the dead. The lid comes off, hovering in the air before slowly lowering itself to the ground. It lands on the dirt with an echoing thump, dust billowing out around it. From where I stand, I can't see into the coffin. I creep forward, Dez at my side. I hear the bargainer's swift inhalation of breath, and then my eyes land on the inside of the coffin. There's no rotting corpse, nor is there a perfectly preserved body. There's nothing here at all. Gallagher Nix might have once rested here, but he does no longer. The sarcophagus is empty. Chapter 9. I stare up at the stars, my body stretched out along the thin pallet resting on the dry earth. The night here in the banished lands is so clear the heavens sparkle above us. Next to me, Dez leans against a boulder, one of his knees bent in front of him, ruminating. He's not angry or surprised, just lost in his own mind. In front of me, our fire crackles. Its flames flicker from rosy pink to pale green to lilac, then buttery yellow. And the smoke that rises into the night sky is cast in dusty pastels. The whole thing is a kaleidoscope of color captured in heat and light, and it's putting out a shit ton of magic. Why it looks like that is a secret Dez hasn't divulged. Yet. How long do you think your father's body has been missing? I ask. Dez shakes his head.
No more than a decade or so.
I raise my eyebrows.
I've checked many times over the 2 centuries since his death.
He explains.
I've been perversely curious whether the Earth would one day accept him. I should have known some other sort of fuckery was afoot.
Resurrected kings, possessed soldiers, and a body-snatching thief. It sounds nonsensical. Perhaps if I wrote it out, I would understand it all better. Do you have a notebook and a pen? I ask the bargainer. In response, he snaps his fingers, and from the ether, he produces a pen and a pad of paper. I take both from him and smooth the paper on the ground. Uncapping the pen, I begin to write. Dez peers over at what I'm scrawling down. When I don't say anything, he asks,
"What are you writing?"
I pause, my eyes moving to his. A timeline. Here is what we know. Your father and the thief are somehow connected, I say. If we start from the beginning, your father was once simply a king with a lot of consorts and kids. He probably wasn't the best dude out there, but he wasn't always murdering his young. I pause, just to make sure I have the story straight so far. Dez gives me a nod, looking vaguely entertained. Then at some point, I say, moving my pen down my timeline, he heard a prophecy about losing his throne, and he murdered his children as a result. I scribble the note in. You, his one remaining son, then overthrew him. I pause to write in the facts. And shortly thereafter, you discovered his body wouldn't decay, so you put him in a tomb. I draw a long line to show the time elapsed. Over a decade ago, his body was still entombed. I fill that out on my sheet. Now his body is gone, and he is very much alive. Once I've written it all out, I stare at the sheet. And I'm not sure this exercise produced a single answer, except that the Thief of Souls began kidnapping soldiers roughly a decade ago, essentially during that shadowy period of time where Gallagher Nix might or might not have been entombed. There could be something to that. My gaze moves back to the beginning of the timeline, around when Gallagher Nix heard a prophecy and began killing his kids. That was the first domino flicked, the one that set in motion everything that led to us sitting here in the banished lands, an empty tomb only a stone's throw away. Have you heard the prophecy yourself? I ask. The corners of Dez's lips pull down.
It's been lost to time.
Well, there goes that potential lead. A flask materializes in the bargainer's hand. He takes a deep swig of it, then wordlessly passes it to me. Dez is not usually this open to sharing alcohol with me. Before he can reconsider the offer, I take the flask from him and bring it to my mouth. I wince as soon as the spicy spirits hit my tongue. There's magic in the drink. Magic that strokes my throat and tickles my stomach. I pass the flask back.
It's too quiet here,
he admits, his gaze skimming our surroundings.
Something is amiss.
Something is more than a little amiss. A man came back from the dead. Dez, Why are we still here? I ask softly.
I haven't pressed the issue up until now because I wanted to give my mate time to work through whatever emotional turmoil is running through his head. And yeah, I get that an empty tomb is not a huge surprise, given that Dez fought his dad back in Flora's forest. But between keeping me alive and then defending his kingdom from an army of possessed soldiers, the King of Night has probably been a little too preoccupied to actually process that fact. That being said, this was supposed to be a quick adventure. See Gallagher Nix's resting place, then go. But now we're lingering. And maybe that wouldn't be a problem, except that, despite the drink, I can feel this place sapping away my strength bit by bit. And Dez has a distant, troubled look on his face, like each second he's moving farther out of my reach. He takes another swig from his flask, passing it back to me.
Someone here must have seen what happened to the body.
He replies,
I'm going to have a little chat with them.
A little chat. Right. That's a bargainer euphemism if I've ever heard one. I swallow a shot's worth of otherworld spirits. Oh, that sits well in the stomach, before handing the flask to Dez and glancing around us. There's not a single spark of life anywhere within eyesight. Not an animal, not a plant, and certainly not a fairy. Besides us, there's no one here right now, just as there likely was no one here the day Gallagher's body disappeared from its tomb. But even if there was, shouldn't we then be looking for them?
They will come to us.
I'm seriously not following. Dez smirks at me, no longer looking so distant.
Have you been feeling a little parched?
Yes, I say slowly. What does that have to do with anything?
There's a reason we banish Fae here. This place is devoid of magic. A long-ago battle reaped every last drop from the land. And magic, Cherub, is a fairy's lifeblood.
With his flask, the bargainer points to the bonfire, which is doing such an excellent job of shoving off the cold that I have to scoot away from it.
That right there is putting out magic in spades. Magic that Fae will be drawn to.
The smoke gives off a perfumed scent, like burning rose petals. And I suddenly get it. The fire was literally sending out a smoke signal, carrying magic off along the wind, coaxing magic-starved Fae towards us.
So we're bait, I say. You decided to make us bait.
The bargainer's gaze sharpens on me, his pale eyes changing color as the flames dance in them.
You're not bait, love. The fire is the bait. You're an iron-manacled trap set to crush willful fairies.
Yes, my siren says. He understands. Jess's eyes move to the fire and his gaze unfocuses. I think that maybe he's going to add something else. But the seconds tick by, and soon it becomes obvious that his thoughts have returned inwards. I don't think I've ever seen the big bad bargainer fall into himself. In my mind, he's the deal-making, door-busting, tatted thug I met 8 years ago. Not this.
Dez.
We all have roles to play. I'm used to being the vulnerable one, the lonely one, and the bargainer is used to being the tough, secretive one. The problem is we aren't actors and this isn't a play. We're flesh and blood, and even a fairy as strong and capable and old, and I mean old as Dez, sometimes needs to be weak. And it's okay to be weak and upset. I've stared down those emotions at the bottom of many a bottle. I think that's where the bargainer is, even though his stoic expression gives away nothing. His kingdom is compromised, and his father is alive, and maybe all sorts of old emotions he thought he buried are now resurfacing. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. But in case I'm not, I get up and close what little distance there is between me and Dez. I sink down on his lap, my thighs on either side of his hips. His gaze sharpens, and he stares at me with those intense, pale eyes of his. He's hard to look at because even after all this time, he's still so ridiculously pretty.
He closes his eyes, and when he opens them, there's so much turbulence in them. So much, an immortal's worth. I touch the corner of his eye. I've got you, I say. And then I kiss one of his cheeks, and then the other. Wordlessly, he pulls me to him.
Cherub.
He brushes my hair back and cups my face.
I'm not sad. I'm so very, very angry.
Now that he says it, I can feel the emotion like it's some sort of magic unto itself. It vibrates beneath his skin and along our connection. It makes his hands shake.
This is the one part of me I don't want you to see,
he says softly, his wrathful side. I really hate to break it to you, Des, but I've already seen you angry. Several times. He's always fearsome to behold.
Not like this.
He shakes his head.
Not like this.
His hands glide up my waist, and that's all it takes for me to realize that even when he's angry, and maybe especially then, I want him. His rage and his touch are stirring the siren within me. I denied her earlier. I'm not sure she'll be denied again. I roll my hips against his. Beneath me, I feel him harden. Des's hands tighten on my flesh.
Careful,
he says, in a tone that should set my teeth on edge. I lean forward, my breath against his lips.
Or else what?
I challenge. Des's eyes narrow even as his mouth begins to curl into a smile. He hooks one of his arms around me and flips us so that my back is now on the ground and his hips are nestled tightly between my thighs.
Tonight I have especially little control, he warns.
It's only now that I notice the shadows at his back. They gather into the shape of his wings, then dissipate. Gather, then dissipate. Again and again. He really is on the knife's edge of control.
You've never been with me when my fae side comes out to play, he says.
There's a note to his voice that is not human. I'm not scared of your fae side, I say defiantly. I never was. He clicks his tongue.
Callie, Callie,
he admonishes. As he speaks, I feel my clothes melt off me, like they were made of hot wax and not fiber. It's a nifty little trick of the bargainers. His clothes follow, and now I feel the hard length of him pressing against my pelvis. He drops down to take a breast into his mouth. That's all it takes for my skin to brighten and my siren to surface. I feel a slight shudder work through him, and I'm not entirely sure if that's because he can sense my magic through our connection, or if my siren simply has that effect on him.
Sweet siren,
he says between kisses.
You better sharpen those claws. Tonight, I don't plan on being nice.
He spreads my legs wide. It's almost lewd how open I am to him. The entire time, he watches me greedily. Aren't you precious to think I'm worried? I openly taunt him. I have my own tricks. I tap his lips with my finger. Tricks that you are no longer immune to, I say, glamour filling my voice. Des's eyes flicker and his wings manifest, spreading wide behind him. They are backlit by the flames, and the thin membranes of them glow with pale warmth.
I dare you, siren.
The bargainer's features seem to sharpen. So the little fairy has come out to play. This is truth or dare all over again. Only now, I'm the one that holds all the cards. How utterly exquisite. Do your worst, Desmond Flynn, I command him. Something dark and obsessive and distinctly fey shines in his eyes as he pins me down to the ground, his body living shackles. I wantonly grind myself against him.
I can feel through our bond this strange need to capture and cart me away, to claim and keep. I want it all his twisted, dark parts. Without another word, he lifts my hips and savagely thrusts into me. I nearly gasp as the hard girth of his cock slides through my wetness. He takes my mouth as he pulls out, only to slam back into me again and again. This is no sweet claiming. This is need. This is possession. It's everything that Dez so assiduously fights against. Damn me, I love every second of it. Harder, I demand. His lips curve up as he obliges. It feels like more than just his cock is inside me, like all of him is surging forward and laying siege. And still, I could stop him if I wanted. If I wanted. What I want is for him to screw me senseless and then screw me some more. He takes my hands and presses them into the ground, holding me hostage as he pounds into me, his broad chest already slick with the first beads of sweat. Confess, I command. Confess to me what you are thinking. He stares down at me, a lock of hair dangling between us. I want to fuck you until you are mindless with want. I want to feel you squeeze my dick as you come around me. I want to die buried inside you. Is that all you've got? I say. I'm disappointed. It's a battle of wills at this point. His fae side pitted against my siren. His magic versus my own. He flips me over and presses me into the ground. Leaning in close to my ear, he whispers, "We can't have that now, can we?" Dez hikes one of my legs up and shoves his cock into me from behind. My eyes flutter at the force of the intrusion. He's rougher than I'm used to, much rougher. And yet, my God, this is everything I never knew I wanted, and I can't seem to get enough. The ground chafes at my knees and breasts. Couldn't fucking care less.
"Touch yourself,"
the bargainer orders, his magic riding the words. I'm a prisoner to them. Of its own volition, my hand slips between my thighs, right where I'm already soaking wet, and then my fingers begin to stroke my clit. It's almost too much. I arch back into Dez, deepening his thrusts. I feel the slick slide of his skin against mine, in and out, in and out. I'm being rubbed in all the right places, and then one of his hands skims my ass. This is new. Is he going to... His hand stops when it finds my other opening. He touches it, circles it, puts just the slightest pressure against it until the tip of his finger teases its way in. Oh my God! Dez leans in close.
"Leave God out of this, cherub. He has nothing to do with it."
Sinful, sinful man. He keeps thrusting, I keep fingering myself, and he keeps probing. It's that last one that's driving me mad. "Deeper," I say breathlessly. It's more the siren who demands it than me. I've never done this before, not with any of the men I've been with. Not that they hadn't tried, I just hadn't wanted it then. I want it now. Oh, how I want it now. I let out a wanton moan at the sensation of having Dez in me twice over. His finger continues to press in, and I get exactly why Dez rules over sex and the night and all that taboo shit that comes with it. Because this is so wrong, but it feels amazing. More, more, more.
"Tell me, siren, are you disappointed now?"
"God, no," I gasp out.
"There's that word again."
His finger presses in deeper. Is that touch supposed to be punishing? It's not. Another husky moan slips out of me as my body thrums with pleasure.
"Perhaps you'd better find a synonym,"
he says. Dez's magic winds around my windpipe and I'm prisoner to it. "Dez!" I give a strangled cry.
"Much better,"
he says, the devil in his voice. All this stimulation